You know, you might not think about palliative and hospice care until those support services are needed by you or your family. When they are, they make can make a huge difference. Larry Mueller here. A couple of guests for you next to talk about this. Dr. Olumuyiwa Adeboye, one of our guests, the Regional Palliative Care Medical Director for Ascension, Wisconsin, and Dr. Norma Turk is the Theta Care Hospice Medical Director. And it's going to be interesting to talk with them about both of these circumstances, hospice or palliative care. What have your experiences been? Do you have questions about the services that are offered? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Adeboye, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate the opportunity to.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you with us. Dr. Turk, thank you as well. They're both with us by phone, by the way, at their respective, probably at their respective places of work.
My pleasure to be here and to celebrate the Hospice and Palliative Month.
Well, I tell you what, it's a great having a firsthand experience with it with my mother, who received just wonderful support and care through hospice. I'm always pleased to be able to talk about this. But maybe you're each from different health organizations, but you've joined together. Why? Tell us why.
Norma, do you want to start off?
Well, sure. Hospice and palliative medicine is a branch of medicine that isn't all that well known among some circles, but it's a very important aspect of caring for the total person. We do a lot of palliative care every day. For example, giving somebody cough syrup when they have a bad cold. It doesn't make the cold go away. It makes them feel better. Palliative care is all about taking care of the symptoms that make your illness be a burden. And sometimes the benefits and burdens of treatment become very heavy on people, and at that point they may want to consider hospice if they have a life-threatening illness or a life-changing illness.
Yeah. Dr. Adeboye, to add to that?
Yes, sure. I mean, just as Norma said, palliative care is appropriate for any serious illness. And most times when we think of serious illnesses, you know, sometimes people think only of things like cancer, but there's things like also dementia, there's congestive heart failure, there's what we call COPD or what we all know as emphysema, there's the kidney diseases, the liver diseases, basically any condition that we don't have a cure for and people live with these illnesses for sometimes long periods of times with different symptoms. And sometimes they're not aware of what's available to them in terms of, well, is this treatable? Is this not treatable? Or some people just think, you know, I'll just keep coming into the hospital every time. Unfortunately, what we see then is people keep coming in and out of the hospital thinking that this chronic illness is something that they're going to, you know, get over or that they'll fight through. And when palliative care gets involved, usually too late, unfortunately, it's like, wait, what? Nobody ever told me this. How come I didn't know about this? So what we try to do here at Ascension Wisconsin, being a faith-based organization, is to make sure that we provide a compassionate, personalized kind of care for all these patients who deal with serious illness. It's team-based. It's not just the provider. Palliative care involves the spiritual aspect and the psychosocial aspects of the illness. Sometimes you find out that some people are carrying so much in them from years of trauma or years of family dynamics that impact on their health. And sometimes we help them work through that and support them and their families through this.
It's really interesting to me that, you know, your center is you're essentially from Oshkosh to north, and Dr. Turk, you're located in Appleton. How do your patients benefit from the collaborative that you have?
Well, ThetaCare Hospice and Palliative Medicine actually serves a 13-county region in northeast Wisconsin, so there is some overlap with the area of the Ascension system as well. But it's a pretty broad area that we can offer services to. And I would say that our programs are probably similar in terms of the way that we provide collaboration in care. So we try to take care of the entire patient, recognizing that the scope of their illness may impact many areas of their life. And so I would just echo Dr. Adeboye, as we know that social services are needed, sometimes counseling services, respite care, pain control, control of burdensome symptoms like nausea, insomnia, anxiety, and also just a forum to really help continually reevaluate what the patient's goals of care are, because those can change throughout the cycle of an illness that is quite prolonged. So, for example, in the program where you were before talking about pancreatic cancer,
yeah.
We know that those patients may have a significantly reduced life expectancy and very burdensome symptoms such as nausea, weight loss, epigastric pain. And so palliative care can help through the process of exploring what that diagnosis means for the patient and for their family, helping them evaluate what treatments might be available for either curative or palliative, that is, life extending, even mm-hmm. when the cancer can't be cured, and then helping cope with the burden of the symptoms that they have while they're in treatment. And for many people, there comes a time at which no further treatment is available, or the side effects of the treatment are too burdensome. And so then we have options for pursuing hospice at that point in the patient's care, focusing purely on comfort at that point and helping make their quality of life be the best. But it really all starts with an advanced care planning discussion, helping patients and their families explore what's really important to them and making sure that at every step along the way, we're delivering on focusing on the patient's goals of care, not what we want for them,
sure.
but what they would want for themselves and what priorities they have.
We have Catherine in Menominee Falls with a comment. Let's go there. Catherine,
yes. My husband had a non-small cell metastatic adenocarcinoma of the lung as a result of exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam. And a day and a half before he died, he was transferred to hospice. And I could immediately tell, just psychologically for him, that he just felt comfortable. I mean, he only had been there for 20 minutes to half an hour. And, of course, I stayed there for a while before I went home for the evening. And as I walked out, I went to the doctor's station, and I asked him, and I said, how can this be that instantaneously, you know, he just already feels relaxed? And I'm sure there are many variables there, but I talked to the doctor, and I said, how can that be that he just feels better? And the doctor said, he says, well, we can do things here that other doctors don't know how to do. And I was just struck by that, and I thought, well, does that just mean just let him go? Or, you know, I'm assuming the obvious would be that, you know, a lot of medications to keep him comfortable, but is there any other mystery behind that or whatever?
Well, maybe I'll have both of you comment on that. Dr. Adeboye?
So I think one of the things Dr. Tuck mentioned earlier on was that initial advanced care planning process. And just to back up to one of your questions earlier on, Larry, here in the Fox Valley, this is where there's been a collaboration between both our systems, ThetaCare and Ascension, going back several years now, which in the last few years became what is known as the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. This organization has been working to ensure that everyone who lives in the Fox Valley basically has what we call an advance directive. And we're kind of going with what happened in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where the Respecting Choices program grew out of. One of the things about this is when someone is diagnosed with a chronic illness or a serious illness or a life-limiting illness, whichever one you want to call it, like your husband, Catherine, the initial discussions, you know, once treatment starts, around what would you like? What are the things that are important to you? are very beneficial. And there have been studies that have shown that when palliative care is incorporated early on into the diagnosis, you know, you get this benefit of reduction in anxiety, depression, and a whole lot of things. I mean, it doesn't mean that when it's not incorporated later, like your husband's case, then you don't have that benefit, which it sounds like he did have. But, you know, the goal is to get that earlier such that you don't have the situation where you get on too late and you're just on hospice and get that benefit for 2-3 days. I think Norma can help me here, but the average length of stay on hospice for most people in the United States, I think, is somewhere around 2 weeks. And the goal is to make sure that, you know, that is much better, because there have been benefits shown to the enhanced quality of life that comes with early introduction of hospice.
Oh.
I would echo what Dr. Attaboy is saying there, because we've shown that good palliative and hospice care can actually extend a patient's life rather than shorten it. And many people associate these things with giving up and surrendering to the illness. But really more, it's about recognizing that, you know, none of us is getting out of here alive. Despite the fact that we suppress this idea daily, we are all going to have to come to terms with the fact that we will die at some point, and making sure that we can give patients the opportunity to make the best of the time that they have. So really the first step is figuring out exactly what a good quality of life is to people. And the advanced care planning discussions have a very broad range of topics that they review that help focus on what things are important to people. Is it, you know, making it to a certain event like a wedding or an anniversary? Is it spending more time with family? Is it being able to get out and travel? Is it just being able to be free of pain and comfortable, and recognizing that those goals may change throughout the course of a patient's illness as well? And then supplying the appropriate supportive services for each stage of illness. Initially, when you're diagnosed, it may all be about evaluating treatment options. And as the illness progresses, then it may be more about stopping or starting certain options or adding more things that help with the symptom burden that goes along with that treatment.
We are going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back to talk with our guests some more about palliative and hospice care. I'm Larry Mueller. Back in a few minutes. Taking a look at palliative and hospice care with our guests today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. With us by phone, Dr. Norma Turk is the Theta Care Hospice Medical Director, and Dr. Olumuyiwa Adeboye is the Regional Palliative Care Medical Director for Ascension, Wisconsin. They have their groups have a collaborative arrangement, and we are visiting with them about the arrangement and also, obviously, about palliative and hospice care. I hope you'll join in with your own questions. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Have you or your family used palliative or hospice care? How did it work out for you? Give us a call. We have John in Dane County who's been waiting a bit, so let's go there. John, thanks for waiting.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, what's on your mind today, John?
I was just wondering if you had some comments about the connection between palliative care and long-term care insurance. Does long-term care insurance have some coverage for palliative care, or is that not?
All right. Dr. Adeboye?
Hi, John. Good morning. Good afternoon. Great question. I think it would be helpful if you had a policy to speak to your policy company in terms of what is available. But what I can tell you is for most people who have commercial insurance or a Medicare coverage. Palliative care is seen as any other consultative service. So if you go see your cardiologist, if you go see your gastroenterologist or any specialist, just like you go see those people, most of these commercial insurances and Medicare pay for those visits. Where sometimes the issue is one of the things you brought up, which is long-term care coverage, and then things like coverage for home visits. That is variable, and that's why I suggested, you know, speaking specifically to your policy company in terms of what options are available. I know some people specifically buy long-term care insurance that would cover this, but I think, again, it depends on each company. That's as much as I know. Norma, do you have any other thoughts on this?
Similar comments. You know, the provisions of each individual policy would be difficult for us to speak to because there are many policies out there with many levels of coverage. So it kind of depends upon the comfort level with your insurance company that you have. What I can say is that Medicare, which is a standard benefit, covers both palliative and hospice care for patients. And most of the Medicare replacement policies or Medicare HMOs will as well.
Hmm. Aaron emailed that he works with patients and their families who are experiencing a diagnosis. Unfortunately, most people hear the words palliative care and associate it with a hospice care. How do you explain the difference to patients is his question.
So one of the things I tell people is this. In the United States, hospice has been a Medicare benefit since, I think, the early 80s. I think we're looking at 30-plus years now. Palliative care as a specialty, you know, like Norma said earlier on, is just being recognized more in the last probably 20, 25 years. I tell people this way. If you consider a whole bowl of fruit, and this is not my analogy, I picked this up from someone, and this is what I've been using for several years now. Consider a whole bowl of fruit. In the whole bowl of fruit, you have different fruits in there. You have bananas, apples, pineapples, and several things. The whole bowl is palliative care. All right? Mm-hmm. If you take, let's say, the apple, mm-hmm. that is hospice. Okay? Hospice is a specific type of palliative care that is appropriate at the end of life. That is when curative options are not available, and the focus then is more on helping the person live a comfort-oriented life. So managing symptoms, you know, none of the back and forth to hospital, keeping them wherever they need to be, maybe in their homes, maybe in a nursing home, maybe in an inpatient hospice setting, depending on where you find yourself. Whereas palliative care is technically much earlier on. It's never too soon to get palliative care once you're diagnosed with a serious illness, is what we tell people. And unfortunately, what we see is a lot of people don't get to see a palliative care provider until that tail end. And unfortunately, what then happens is they go straight into hospice, which is not a bad thing. But, you know, the goal of what we're hoping is that the person and their family get to have a good quality of life. So the earlier they get on board, the better.
Yeah.
Palliative care is a broad, all-encompassing thing. Hospice is more of palliative care that's appropriate, according to Medicare definitions, in the last 6 months of life. When treatment options are not possible anymore, curative treatment options, that is. So it's not like giving up. And as Norma said before, when people go on hospice, most times you find that they have a good quality of life, they flourish. Some people actually get signed off of hospice because they do so well while on hospice that the reason why they go on hospice is no longer there. That's a small subset of people, though.
My mother was included in that. I was very happy. Well, my sister came home to spend my mother's final time with her and took such good care of her that the hospice people would always congratulate her on how well she did with my mother. It was a great thing that her life was extended.
That's good.
Quite a bit. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. My uncle went to the ER on Friday, and Saturday he was talking and fine, and Sunday he slipped into a coma, and he was in hospice for like 20 minutes, and he passed away. And I got to say, the hospice people are, they're angels. If there's angels, it's the hospice people. Yeah. I mean, it was just amazing. So.
Thank you, Nick. I'm with you on that, for sure.
Well, I really appreciate that comment very much. And the way that we like to characterize hospice care is it may be low tech, but it's very high touch.
Mm-hmm.
We really try to focus on everything that we can do to assure the patient's comfort and especially give peace of mind to the entire family, because we recognize that it's not just the person that's suffering the illness themselves. Their entire family is suffering along with them. And the role of family caregivers, unfortunately, in our society is really undervalued.
Yeah.
But that is such an important part of what we try to support in hospice in terms of bringing the appropriate skilled nursing assistants into the home, sometimes physical or occupational therapy to help them be able to transfer safely or get about in their home without falling, bringing nurses to help do education about medications, taking care of wounds, helping them with any symptoms that they might develop in the meantime, and then also extended support services such as social workers, chaplains. We have pet therapy, music therapy, all of these things that help to reduce pain and anxiety and help people feel like they're not giving up on life, that life is coming to them wherever their needs can be met.
Yeah. Helen in Little Chute, we go to you next. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My husband passed 2 years ago, and it was something I absolutely dreaded. But I have to give a shout out and a thank you to the data care staff that came to our home. And then he was transferred to hospice at Cherry Meadows. And as the other caller said, the staff, they were like angels. I mean, they just pretty much covered everything, and they made such a sad, difficult period of my life very, very bearable as a widow. And I just can't say enough good things about all the care that my husband had received. And truly, those folks are angels. So yeah. That's all I wanted to say.
Helen, thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you, Helen. And highlighting our inpatient hospice facility is certainly something that I should have done. Cherry Meadows is a 10-bed unit for patients that are having acute symptoms that need to be managed on an active basis, hourly or at least several times a day. And then we also have a 10-bed hospice residence attached for patients that don't have the kind of family support that's needed, and they need somebody there 24/7. And so being able to have these facilities available right here in the Valley is a great resource. We also, every hospice will offer what's called a respite benefit. So we recognize that the burden of being a family caregiver is huge for some people, and that they may need a break. So there's up to 5 days a month when they can come in to the hospice facility on respite care, and that's covered by the Medicare hospice benefit. So just to have a chance for a family vacation or to take care of your own needs, if perhaps the family caregiver needs to go in and have surgery themselves, who knows?
Yeah.
But all of those things are considerations in choosing a hospice.
Let's take another call. Barbara in Crandon, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is an excellent topic. And my mother was with Ascension in home hospice, and the care was excellent. All the staff was wonderful, answered all of my questions. The only thing that I regret is that I did not do it sooner with the palliative care, and I think that was because of my own denial. And my mom lived with us for 3.5 years with severe Alzheimer's and cancer. And but the staff through one of the offices in Rhinelander was excellent. I couldn't thank them enough for what they provided for my mom and I and our family.
Oh, Barbara, thank you so much. Dr. Adebuya, comment?
Thank you very much, Barbara. I think one of the other things that Barbara highlights there is, you know, Norm mentioned the ability to have an inpatient residential hospice. One of the things you find out is most of hospice in the United States actually happens in the home. And unlike Theta Care in the Valley that has the well-established Cherry Meadows inpatient facility, you know, we tend to provide a lot much more of the hospice care outside facilities, but some in the facilities, but in the home of the patient. The point she made there is very true. People are scared, and that's a recurring theme that you probably have noted. There's a fear about having the conversation around hospice. We call it the H word in our circles. You know, everybody's kind of afraid. They feel like once you talk about hospice, it's about giving up. Unfortunately, it's not. It's more about helping that person have the best quality of life. If there's anything anybody takes away from this today, is that focus on having the best quality of life possible, whether you're on hospice or you're receiving palliative care. And here's the thing I tell people. You know, you go into the hospital, you go in with chest pain, they run tests and find out that, oh, you have something going on with your heart. You know, the default is you get a heart specialist come to see you. If you go into the hospital and you're bleeding or something and it seems like it's internal bleeding from your gut, you get a stomach specialist to come see you. Unfortunately, for palliative care, you know, when people come into the hospital with multiple medical problems where their goals are not really established, it's not really thought of. And one of the aims of most organizations right now is to help that level of what we call primary palliative care, which is palliative care that every provider can do. Norma mentioned earlier on relieving symptoms, like, you know, helping with cough medicines. That is basically like primary palliative care. When you start getting a specialist involved, like myself or Norma, that's when you now start talking about specialty level palliative care. But the initial basic management of things should happen with the regular providers, which happens most times. Unfortunately, though, it doesn't come to the front of mind for most people. And so we try to make sure that we get people to think about this all the time. But good point.
I wanted to bring up the fact that many people have mentioned the workers as like angels, and that was my own characterization based on my own experiences relating to my mother. What kinds of training? I always thought, oh, it takes a special kind of person to do this work, but there's got to be training that they go through for this area of healthcare. Dr. Turk, maybe you could comment first.
Certainly, and there are many training programs available through the Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association, which is a national organization that's focused on hospice and palliative medicine for nursing. There's also in-services that we offer regularly focusing on specific topics having to do with palliative medicine, oftentimes associated with the particular illnesses that lead somebody to needing palliative medicine. Cancer always comes to the forefront because many of our older chemotherapies had many, many side effect burdens. The new immunotherapies are perhaps better tolerated, other than the cost, which is hard to tolerate for many people. But these typically have with them nausea, loss of appetite, fatigue, anemia, and infections that need to be dealt with. And so training our providers about the basic illnesses is a big part of it. And then also focusing on how to support patients emotionally and spiritually through this process. As far as physicians, there is a National Palliative Certification, which is a fellowship program of 2 years, where we work with both palliative and hospice fields in order to learn how to talk to patients about what their goals and wishes are, doing what's called forecasting and foretelling. So forecasting is helping to identify patients who have a life-threatening illness and a prognosis which is not very long. And then the foretelling, actually sharing that information with the family in a sensitive way to help them understand what the illness means for them and how much time they might have. I often use it as an example. You know, if you in your ordinary life, maybe you work in a grocery store or maybe you're in an office, and if you were to find out you only had 2 years to live, what would you do differently with the time that you have? And so that foretelling part, helping explain to patients what the sources of their mortality or illness might be and how much time they might expect to have, might cause them to refocus their goals in a way that allows them to have more meaning. Mm. So the education process is not just with those providers, but with how we can teach people how to make the most of the life that they have.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for anyone who may need these services? It sounds like earlier is better when it comes to palliative care, but where do they start?
So, good question. A few shameless plugs. Number one, there is an organization called the Palliative Care Network of Wisconsin. I happen to be on the board of the organization. It's a group of just several of us who work in different health systems across the state. And it's not just physicians. On the board, we have social workers. We try and have chaplains on there, nurses. And it's a grassroots organization with the goal of advancing education around palliative care, providing advocacy to kind of help with systems change. If you check our website, www.mypcnow.org, there's a lot of information about palliative care on there. Another organization that has information is the Center to Advance Palliative Care, which is also known as CAPC. And they have a website called getpalliativecare.org. Unfortunately, what we tend to see nationwide is a lot of palliative care is usually in the urban areas, with the rural areas being kind of far-flung. And so there are different ways that palliative care is being approached to get care, to get services to those places. Here at Ascension Wisconsin, in the last 2 years, we've been doing a pilot program through one of our smaller critical access hospitals in Chilton, where we're actually providing palliative care services through what is known as telemedicine. Rather than have the patients travel from Chilton to Appleton, where I'm based, they are in the hospital in Chilton, and we can have the same kind of conversation, maybe not on the same level with person to person, but over a telemonitor. You know, I see mm-hmm. them, they see me, and we can have the same conversations. What's important to you? Who's there with you? What are your levels of support? What symptoms are bothering you? Nationwide, there are a number of places that are doing this right now. And we're hoping that, you know, this grows and we can get this into several other places.
It's wonderful. Here we are about out of time. The time flew by. Dr. Turk and Dr. Adebuya, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us. We'll try and get those websites up on our page at here at WPR. But again, I want to thank you so much for talking with us about palliative and hospice care. I learned some things, and I bet our listeners did too. Thank you so much.
And Larry, thanks for sharing your story as well. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Appreciate it very much having them both with us. Dr. Norma Turk, internist at Theta Care Regional Medical Center, Appleton, and she's the director there. Dr. Olumuyiwa Adebuye is the Regional Palliative Care Medical Director for Ascension, Wisconsin. They're both in the northern part of the state. I think Dr. Adebuyiwa is in the Oshkosh, essentially Oshkosh to the Northwoods. We'll talk again about that topic. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.